There are changes taking place at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That's the quasi-governmental body which helps to fund public broadcasting, including National Public Radio. Last week, we learned that Kenneth Tomlinson, the former chairman of the corporation, stepped down as a member of the CPB board. His resignation came amid the board's review of a report about Tomlinson's efforts to weed out what he called liberal bias in public broadcasting. The CPB's full report is expected to be released to the public early next week. For this next segment, we'll be taking calls if you think there needs to be more balance in public broadcasting or about the investigation of public broadcasting. If you have questions about what's going on, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us to talk more about these developments is NPR's media correspondent David Folkenflik, who's with us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on the program, David.
Good to join you.
Tomlinson's resignation, did this come as a surprise?
Well, the board was in an incredibly difficult position. Tomlinson's been an exceptionally forceful and influential figure at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. His term as chairman ended at the end of September, but he remained on the board and he remained an incredibly influential figure. The chairman of the board, Cheryl Halpern, who replaced him as chair, was somebody he had sort of brought along. The CEO, Patricia Harrison, another figure that he had helped groom and select. He was on the board, and yet they were considering, behind closed doors last week for 3 days, the preliminary version of the Inspector General's report, which is believed to have extremely critical things to say him and his leadership. In considering that report, it was very awkward for them to have him in the room. And ultimately, right. What they worked out, although without much explanation, was for him to withdraw as a member of the board and resign.
Now, you've not seen that report. It's not been made public as yet. Do we know whether it focuses more on what Mr. Tomlinson was trying to do or how he went about doing it?
Well, as you say, they've kept an incredibly tight circle of people who's actually seen the report. It's due to be released November 15th, that is next week. We don't know what the findings are. We do know the area that the Inspector General was interested in. That is, we've spoken to a number of people who've been interviewed fairly intensely by the Inspector General and his crew, and it's involved the question, a series of questions related. Mr. Tomlinson, as chairman, sort of instigated a series of moves designed, among other things, to counter what he felt was an unwieldy liberal flavor to public broadcasting, both at PBS and at NPR. So, for example, he hired a monitor to determine for PBS and NPR shows whether their guests, where they rated ideologically. He believed that they'd be found to be overwhelmingly liberal. Mm-hmm. And in fact, his friend who he hired as a consultant found just that. He pushed for and succeeded in getting the creation of a couple ombudsmen to solicit and field complaints from listeners mm-hmm. and viewers of PBS and NPR. He very much aggressively pushed for the creation of a weekly show that features the conservative editorial writers of the Wall Street Journal. That's now on PBS. Mm-hmm. And the question is, did he do this with full consultation? Did he do it following the procedures? Did he overstep the mandate of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting? It's probably worth saying explicitly what the CPB does. It's a private corporation set up by Congress to serve as sort of a conduit for public funds, currently about $400 million a year, to go to various arms of public broadcasting. So PBS and NPR member stations rely significantly on this. NPR gets a bit of money. PBS television is much more expensive. It gets some more money than NPR does. Some of NPR's competitors, Marketplace, Minnesota Public Broadcasting, things like that receive some money as well. In and of itself, it's supposed to make sure that it's statutorily that there's objectivity and balance in news and public affairs programming. Mm-hmm. But it's also supposed to serve as a heat shield for public broadcasting to protect it from political influence.
And that's why it was set up as a separate company as opposed to Congress just giving money to public broadcasting directly.
Exactly so. And the question about Tomlinson is, did he bring political influence in under the tent? Was he sort of the political influencer in a way that may have exceeded his authority?
And one of the things that has raised questions about that is we know that a set of emails between him, Mr. Tomlinson, and Karl Rove, the deputy chief of staff at the White House, the architect, as George Bush calls him, a man under a cloud at the moment in terms of the Fitzgerald investigation of the CIA leak, but that's another story, but that there's a set of emails between Karl Rove and Mr. Tomlinson.
Well, obviously, anything in just the name Karl Rove these days tends to set off little seismic twitches on certain people's radar screens. We don't know anything about what those emails said. Mr. Tomlinson, although a longtime journalist, a former executive editor of Reader's Digest, also has been very active in Republican political circles, and as I understand it, has been a fairly longtime associate of Mr. Rove. It's not known what's in those emails. Certainly, emails that the New York Times have seen, emails that NPR has obtained, have shown that he has seemingly tried to influence both senior hires at CPB and certain kinds of policy.
He, Karl Rove?
Excuse me, he, Ken Tomlinson, a fair point, that Mr. Tomlinson sought to influence both the hiring of certain key figures at CPB and certain kinds of policy positions for CPB at the behest of White House officials. And that would seem to, in some ways, indicate some level of political influence.
Now, let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. And we'll turn to Tom. Tom calling us from Denver.
Hi, how are you?
All right.
Thanks for letting me on.
Sure.
One thing I wanted to ask, this is maybe more parenthetical, but my guess would be that the Wall Street Journal editorial program may have the lowest ratings of any of the NPR programs. And, I wonder if they could speak to that. Have they checked the ratings on that show? Because, for all Mr. Tomlinson wanted, I guess you'd say Republican credentials is... Has he been efficient? Has he helped PBS in disseminating information, I guess?
Well, that show and I guess the short-lived Tucker Carlson show that was also on PBS, he left for other reasons to go have his own show on commercial television where he could apparently make more money. But I guess the Wall Street Journal show, David Folkenflik, is the last tangible result, legacy of Mr. Tomlinson's regime.
That's right. The Wall Street Journal is a weekly show that appears generally on Fridays on PBS. It's a television show. I haven't checked the ratings recently. I can say that it's not part of sort of the – I can't summon the exact terminology, but there are certain shows which are essentially effectively mandatory carry show for station if they're going to be part of sort of the signature PBS lineup, that you're supposed to carry mystery at a certain – roughly in a certain time frame. You're supposed to carry certain – major legacy shows for PBS. And the Wall Street Journal program is offered to all stations, and many of them do carry it, but it's not given that quite that classification, and therefore there's less of a sort of call it pressure from the system to carry it at a given time or on a given day. So what happens is a lot of local stations will carry it, but at less standard hours, or it might be in the morning on Saturdays as opposed to Friday during prime time. Mm-hmm. And therefore it does have less consistent ratings than a number of the other kind of public affairs and news programs on PBS. It may be that viewers also separately, for taste reasons, decide that, but that certainly seems to contribute to that. Fewer stations carry it than, say, would carry Wall Street or Washington Week in Review.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, I'll confess to a little agenda here. I mean, I think Paul Gigot, probably read the Wall Street Journal for 35, 40 years because of business interests, but the editorial page, they always used to talk about those books that he wrote on the Clintons and Whitewater, and it may have been a coffee table staple in every conservative house in the country, my guess is that it was not really a publishing success either. So,
well, we'll have to see about that. Anyway, Tom, thanks very much for the call.
You bet. Thanks.
Mr. Tomlinson's departure from the board, does it change much at CPB?
Well, it's really not clear yet. The new chairwoman, Cheryl Halpern, has been very active in Republican circles. She was, if I'm not mistaken, the head of what's called the Republican Jewish Council, an advisory group, had been involved in donating and raising money for Republican causes. The current CEO, who Tomlinson groomed and helped to pick, is a woman named Patricia Harrison. She used to be the co-chairwoman of the Republican National Committee. That's the party for 4 years, as well as then being a State Department official. The real question is whether they're going to have the sort of appetite for combat that that Mr. Tomlinson did. He talked about sort of initially trying to do these things quietly and not wanting these debates to break out into the public. But nonetheless, he seemed to sort of welcome them, sort of a bring it on mentality, that he felt that these were issues that had been languishing and allowed to just sort of fester without being confronted.
He is also involved in something called the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which oversees the Voice of America, the various other Radio Marti, Radio Sawa, various language broadcasts that the United States does. And there's some question being raised about Mr. Tomlinson's role there as well.
That's right. There are actually two separate Inspector General reports going on that arm of things. One of them does not appear to have really anything to do with Mr. Tomlinson, and it's into certain kinds of accounting practices at Al Hura and Radio Sawa, which the Arabic language services created after sort of our initiative on terrorism. There's also some question that's been reported in the New York Times initially about the question of whether Mr. Tomlinson was involved in misuse of funds, misappropriation of funds, some inappropriate activities. Those have not been spelled out. They were requested by two Democratic lawmakers for there to be an inquiry, but there's not been specific allegations on that. It's not known whether there's any substance to it. That report is not as far along as the one on the other side of the ledger at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It does shore up how integral he's been to both of these realms, both international broadcasting, sort of a quasi-propaganda initiative, and these things here at home.
David Folkenflik will stay tuned for further developments. Thanks very much.
You bet.
NPR's David Folkenflik, NPR's media correspondent, joined us here in Studio 3A. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.